This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 18th of July 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 18th of July, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now the main headlines this week: hospital failed to spot how ill patient was. Developer to put new plan forward, and concerns raised over Pitvale plans. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is hospital failed to spot how ill patient was. Doctor apologised after 46-year-old woman's death. A senior doctor has publicly apologised to the family of a woman who died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital after staff failed to spot how ill she was. Dr. Andrew Bishop, Chief Medical Officer for Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, spoke to the family of Karen Spatcher at her inquest last week. He said, "We failed to keep her safe. There are many causes of what happened, but none of those are excuses. There are two main questions. How can she have been so ill and us not have noticed that? And when we discovered that, how did we fail to save her?" The inquest heard staff at the RHCH in Winchester failed to spot symptoms of internal organ damage. Miss Spatcher was 46 when she died in December 2012. She had suffered a slip disc and was treated for back pain with prescription drugs from the Grattan surgery in Sutton Scotney. She was then twice admitted to the RHCH, the second time on December 15, 2012, complaining of abdominal pain and severe constipation. She was treated for a urinary tract infection and given anti-inflammatory medication. Due to a shortage of appropriate beds after a norovirus outbreak, Miss Spatcher of Roberts Road, Barton Stacey, was moved from an acute ward to a treatment centre, which was designed for short-stay patients preparing for surgery. Consequently, she was missed off the Monday morning ward round, meaning no doctor saw her for 24 hours. The inquest heard there was confusion about who was responsible for her care, and on the morning of Tuesday, December 18th, she was rushed to have an emergency operation to relieve the pressure in her abdomen. There she was anaesthetised by Dr. Jaco de Beurs, who admitted it was only the second time he had performed such emergency surgery. Miss Spatcher, who moved to Barton Stacey in 1996 after marrying her then husband, died when her heart rate dropped after a high dose of anaesthetic, which aggravated the effect of her ruptured colon. Doctors spent up to 40 minutes trying to revive her. Her death prompted an investigation into the administration of anaesthetics at the hospital. A family friend, Elaine Carr, paid tribute to the insurance manager. She said she was a vibrant, colourful and energetic person. South Central Hampshire coroner Graham Short returned a narrative verdict. He said, "Her deteriorating condition on December the 17th was not recognised due to A, confusion about who was responsible for her care, B, the fact that she was placed in a daycare treatment centre as a result of a shortage of beds at the time, C, a delay in diagnosis, and D, the excessive dose of the drug thiopentone used in anaesthetic induction." In a statement, HHFT said, "Our sincere condolences go to Karen Spatcher's family and friends. We are very sorry for the actions that led to her death. We have learned from this tragic incident and we worked fast to make real changes at the time."
The second headline story concerns our old friend, the Silver Hill Development. It's headed, "Developer to put new plan forward. New application approved for Silver Hill." The developer has got the go-ahead to apply to revamp the £150 million Silver Hill scheme in Winchester. After a six-hour meeting, the City Council Cabinet sorry, I'll start it again. After the six-hour meeting, the City Council Cabinet unanimously agreed to allow Henderson to effectively scrap the scheme approved in 2009 and put in a new application. That application has saved the scheme from collapse, according to Henderson, because the changes were vital to make it viable. A last-ditch campaign by City Councillor Kim Kotlieb attracted more than 150 people at the Guildhall last Thursday evening. A big public presence was again expected last Wednesday when the full council was due to discuss it. If it raises major issues, then it'll go back to Cabinet. Its opponents fear Silver Hill will ruin Winchester, sucking life from the high street and, at up to seven stories high, loom over the city. There were so many people wanting to attend last Thursday that the meeting was moved to the Guildhall Conference Chamber, delaying the start by 30 minutes. By decision time at 1:15 a.m. on Friday, there were only three members of the public left. Henderson wants to scrap plans for a bus station and offices, cut the number of flats from 307 to 184, and remove any social housing, reduce the number of public car parking spaces from 330 to 279, but provide more private parking and more shops, including a department store. Providing affordable housing would be dependent on how profitable Silver Hill becomes, but there would be no guarantee, admitted Councillor Victoria Weston, deputy leader. Former City Councillor Patrick Davis called for affordable housing to be retained. He said, "I don't believe Henderson will walk away if the council stick to 35% affordable housing. Another developer would take it up. We need a mixed development in the centre of the city." But Martin Perry, retail director at Henderson, said Silver Hill would collapse without the new planning application. He said it was too late to alter the plans again, with the development agreement set to expire in a few months. Councillor Gottlieb called for an independent review to give a second opinion on the scheme. But council leader Rob Humby said, "The due diligence is what we have been doing for the last 18 months. I don't see what there is to gain to start the process again." Most of the audience opposed the scheme. Hugh Petter of Adam Architecture said, "It's a mystery how Silver Hill got permission in the first place. The proposed scale is just too big. It will transform the character of Winchester." There was some support for the scheme, however. The new planning application is due this autumn. Construction could start in early 2015. The Cabinet heard that postponing or abandoning the scheme would cost money. The Friarsgate multi-storey car park, due for demolition, is deteriorating fast and must be closed for the public later this year. The meeting also heard that the council will not get a better deal from a developer if the process started again. There was no guarantee a new compulsory purchase order would be secured. Peter Wilkes, planning consultant, said Silver Hill would fulfil a need for more shops and would fend off pressure for out-of-town shopping centres. It would capture a large chunk of any growth in the retail market until 2026, when the high street would catch up.
And the final headline, concerns raised over Pitvale plans. 500 new homes, among biggest schemes since the 80s. A developer is drawing up plans for one of the biggest housing schemes in Winchester in decades. Linden Homes wants to build 500 homes at Pitvale, the land off Romsey Road between Killam Lane and Enmill Lane Pit. Held a public consultation at the Tower at King's School on Tuesday evening to show the public its initial ideas. The 500 homes make it the largest scheme in the city since Badger Farm in the 1980s, apart from 2000 home Barton Farm. The proposed development is next to Pitt Manor, the 200 home scheme which got permission after a public inquiry and where construction started recently. One resident from Oliver's Battery, who asked not to be named, said, "The traffic's going to be hell if this gets through. It's bad enough with Pitt Manor, but add another 500 homes and it'll be just awful." A spokesman for Lyndon Holmes at the exhibition said, "It's just provisional at this stage, and it's a way of trying to gauge the public's reaction to what's been suggested. We will be having another exhibition in September, based on the feedback today and the surveys we will conduct over the next few months." Lyndon is due soon to give a presentation to the City of Winchester Trust, the preservation watchdogs. But Patrick Davis, the chairman of the policy group, said, "Alarm bells are ringing all round. It would be catastrophic if this gets permission." The architect Paul Bulkley is putting forward the argument that Winchester has to grow, but the City Council planners are adamant there are more than adequate sites within the city. I would hope the City Council line will be that this is outside the development boundary and that we have adequate land supply for 5 years or more. It would open the floodgates. It would breach the principle that development only takes place within the allocated city boundary. It is a real red flag scheme. If this goes through, the policy goes out of the window.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. So now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, and first person. And then we'll have the announcements and what's on feature. So we start with the death announcements for this week. Ayling, Ethel Ayling, who died peacefully on the 9th of July, aged 95. Cook, John Cook, died suddenly on the 9th of July, aged 70. Cooper, Jean Mary Cooper, died peacefully after a short illness. Harvey, Glyn Harvey, died peacefully on the 12th of July. Holloway, Dorothy Elizabeth Holloway, died in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 92. McCarthy, Joan McCarthy, died peacefully at Old Alsford Cottage Rest Home, aged 92. Riggs, Leonard James Riggs, died unexpectedly at home in Bournemouth, aged 71. Selby, Irene Selby, died on the 11th of July at Copper Beaches Nursing Home, Andover. Self, Babs Self, died peacefully after a long illness, aged 89. And Shaw, Charles Stewart Shaw of Alsford, died peacefully on the 9th of July, aged 92. And now move on to Christian comment. Albie, please.
Yes, St Swithin and water conflicts. Monday was the feast of St Swithin, a bishop of Winchester in the 9th century, around 862. A humble man, he requested that his tomb be outside the cathedral, where passers-by might tread on his grave and the rain might fall on it. An excessive deluge one year forced the decision to move the grave inside. Possibly this gave rise to the legend that if it rains on St Swithin's Day, it will rain for 40 days. St Swithin's Day, if thou dost rain, for 40 days it will remain. St Swithin's Day, if thou be fair, for 40 days 'twill rain no mare. Of course, this may have a straightforward meteorological interpretation. The position of the jet stream around early July determines the general weather for hot, cold, dry or wet for the rest of the summer. But in our times, St Swithin's Day could become more complex than simply praying for rain, or the reverse. For water, so sacred to all religions, is now a source of global conflict. The world's earliest documented water war happened 4,500 years ago, when the armies of Lagash and Umma, city-states near the junction of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, battled with spears and chariots after Umma's king drained an irrigation canal leading from the Tigris. Enannatum, ruler of Lagash, went into battle, reads the story, and left behind 60 soldiers dead on the bank of the canal. Fast forward to the current conflicts in the same region, it is thought by experts both here and in Baghdad that the outcome of the Iraq and Syrian conflicts may rest on who controls the region's dwindling water supplies. This is because rivers, canals, dams, sewage and desalination plants are now all military targets in this semi-arid region that regularly experiences extreme water shortages. Control of water supplies gives strategic control over both cities and countryside. We are seeing a battle for control of water. Water is now the major strategic objective of all groups in Iraq. It's life or death. If you control water in Iraq, you have a grip on Baghdad. Water is essential in this conflict. If we ask why water is the source of conflict, the answer is crystal clear. 11% of the global population, 783 million people, are still without access to safe sources of drinking water. This provides the catalyst for potential for water disputes. In Gaza, over 90% of drinking water is polluted. So, if we stop by the shrine in St. Swithin, in the cathedral, this week, let's extend our concern from rain or sun in Hampshire to ending water conflicts around the world. And that Christian comment is by Mary Gray.
Thank you, Albie. Now we're moving on to letters to the editor, and Nikki's going to start off.
And this one from Dee Collins in Winnell. Winchester is looking shabby. Sir, I would like to endorse what Mrs. Compton said about shabby Winchester. Letters, June 26th. I haven't been around town for about a year due to illness, but I have acquired a disability scooter and am now getting around a bit. A couple of weeks ago, I visited North Wall's wreck. The grass in front of the bowling green has not been cut for weeks, and the river is so silted up with the trees overhanging into the water, collecting dead branches and rubbish. When I was a lad, boats were able to be rowed right round. Now a duck would have difficulty. Mrs. Compton is also correct to mention the weeds springing up from the gutters. My patch is Lower Winnell, Water Lane, Wales Street, and the blackberry bushes, etc., along the railings in Water Lane, and the weeds by the side of the river opposite the Willow Tree Pub is a disgrace. I finish with the state of our bus station. Visitors must be appalled by it. The trouble is, nobody cares any more, do they? And that's D. Collins, Ebden Road, Winnell.
And the second letter on the same subject, this is written by Miss J. A. Hilton. It's headed, Time Shabby City Was Cleaned Up. Sir, I wholeheartedly agree with Miss M. Compton's letter, Chronicle, June 26th, on the shabby state of Winchester. I was born in Winchester and have known the city for many years, having lived here most of my life. I have watched the fall in standards and general decline. It was once a beautiful city, clean, well-preserved and tidy. Grass-cutting, weeds, pavement cleaning and rubbish were never a problem. Now, anything is acceptable. Most councillors do not live in Winchester and are not interested in the state of the city. The introduction of the street market and the increasing number of food stalls has exacerbated the problem of rubbish. Not a pretty sight piled up at all times of the day in the High Street and surrounding areas. Health issues and vermin are both a concern. I know many residents are concerned about the deterioration of Winchester. Now that visitors have noted the poor state of the city, perhaps something might be done. I wonder. That is from Miss J. A. Hilton of St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
Now a letter from Tony Wyman of Childhood's Dream, The Brooks, Winchester. Expand city centre car parks or boost public transport. A car-based economy needs car parks. Sir, we need to accept that Winchester and rural Hampshire is a car-based economy and plan for this accordingly. This may not be the most desirable state of affairs, and I can already hear the protests from the Green Lobby, but this is the reality consequential on years of neglect of our transport infrastructure. The rural railways mostly went long ago, and the bus services are fast following. Hampshire buses are expensive, infrequent, and unreliable. They are not even for the poor. They are for those with subsidised bus passes, school children, and the few who have no alternative. Local government is decreasing subsidy and is seemingly no longer interested in buses even to the extent of accepting the closure of Winchester bus station. Trains are for long-distance use, and most people need a car to get to the nearest station. Walking and cycling are only an option for the young and or fit in a short distance of Winchester. How many people will ever walk or cycle from Ulster to Winchester? And yet, the councils are inconsistent and ignore the consequences of their own actions. Winchester City Council seems obsessed by building on the car parks now essential for our economy, instead of expanding car parking in the city. They hide behind park and ride, always inadequate for shoppers and only really suitable for office workers and all-day visitors. Everyone bemoans the polluted city centre, but instead of building the ring road so necessary to alleviate congestion and to close the town to through traffic, the council proposes to increase pollution by funnelling the remaining buses down Friarsgate. Council wants to increase the retail space by building Silver Hill, but instead of planning for the increased number of shoppers needed to support those shops, it proposes to decrease available parking. The City Council in particular needs to be consistent in its thinking. It needs either to accept the car-based economy and plan for it and expand city centre car parks, or bring in the subsidies, planning and regulation needed to restore public transport, and certainly not close the bus station.
And this from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, Abington. Sir, I don't think I have ever been quite so depressed and embarrassed at being part of the political process as when I attended the special cabinet meeting last Thursday. This was intended to be an occasion when the decision makers were to carefully consider before making a critical decision on what is the most important development in Winchester's modern history. It was meant to be a thoughtful and robust examination of numerous and complex issues, and at a time to leave no stone unturned and nothing not properly revealed or understood. Instead, in what appeared to be a stage-managed procession of rehearsed answers to rehearsed questions, none of this which convinced anyone in the audience, the decision by the City Council, acting as landowner, to support the current Silver Hill development was slipped through in the early hours of Friday. It was a supine and superficial exercise, and barely a pebble was disturbed. But as miserable as the proceedings on the top table were, far, far more encouraging and inspiring was the audience, which provided the first and vibrant demonstration of the depth and extent of public concern. The public speakers were all remarkably incisive and erudite, and the searching nature of their inquiries was in sharp contrast to those actually making the decisions. This is now a long-haul battle, but it is absolutely a winnable one, and certainly I, and now a great number of others, will not rest until the current proposal is stopped and replaced by something that will architecturally and culturally enhance and truly represent something that Winchester deserves. Councillor Kim A. Gottlieb, Abington.
And the second letter on the same subject, this one is written by Hugh Petter. Sir, I spoke at the packed cabinet meeting of Winchester Council to try to persuade members to resist the latest proposed dilution of the scheme for Silver Hill, to go back to the drawing board and to develop a new and more appropriately scaled design. My efforts were in vain, and it was evident to all those present that neither officers nor councillors were really interested in anything that the public had to say. I propose, therefore, that a foundation stone should be designed in a prominent place into the new buildings in Silver Hill. On this stone should be carved the names of all those who have been instrumental in bringing this design to fruition. Members, officers, developers, etc. If officers and members are right, they should be delighted to have their name publicly associated with such a successful new addition to Winchester. But if I am right, the names for those directly responsible for wrecking our city will be on public view for all to see for generations to come. That's from Hugh Petter, Main Road, Oslebury.
And now a letter from Jacqueline Reagan of Hyde Close Hyde. Bad planning affects everyone. Sir, I was pleased to read your front page article on planning major sites for development You're Making a Huge Mistake Over Parking, July the 3rd. I'm also grateful to resident Steve Harborne for bringing to attention local concerns on local development and their consequences at the cattle market. It is important that ideas and plans are clearly put forward for people to air their views. Yes, we need to plan, but people have to live out their lives with the consequences of decisions made. And there are too many examples of bad plans and their side effects. Lots of people have ideas and want to be consulted. Some, of course, are apathetic and think it's a waste of time and they will not be listened to, because that's the way it works. I hope they are wrong, for Winchester's sake.
Thank you. That ends the letters. We move on to historical items. Nikki, we're going to go back 100 years, I think.
July the 14th, 1914. Dead boy found. Crowd Hill. Fatality. This village received quite a shock yesterday evening when it became known that a little lad, Sidney Hogsflesh, son of the landlord of the Fox and Hounds Inn, had been found down the well. It appears he had been missing for some time during the day. It is not known how he came there, but as the poor little fellow was subject to fits, it might have happened in one of these afflictions.
And two items from 50 years ago, that's July the 14th, 1964. New headquarters to become reality. From small beginnings in 1874, when General Roy measured a baseline on Hounslow Heath, the making of ordnance survey maps in this county has gone from strength to strength. The next 3 years will see the completion of the new headquarters building of the Ordnance Survey at Maybush, Southampton. A building with an estimated cost of about £3.5 million will house nearly 3,000 staff who come from present unsuitable old buildings at Southampton and from offices in Chessington, Hinchley Wood and Kensington. The second item is headed Work Experience. Nearly 40 fifth formers at Wyvern County Secondary School, Eastleigh, due to leave the school at the end of the present term, are taking part in an unusual vocational guidance experiment this week. With the cooperation of various employers in Eastleigh, Winchester and Fair Oak, they are spending the week as guests in the various types of employment they wish to take up in order to gain realistic experience.
And now, two items from 25 years ago, 14th of July, 1989. First one, prime fishing land sold off. About 1.5 miles of arguably the finest double bank fishing on the River Itchen has been sold by private treaty. East Lodge Fishings near Branbridge comprises a 4-bedroomed lodge, about 15 acres of grounds, including woodland, together with the fishings. The beat itself was mentioned at length in Major Phelps' famous book, Fisherman's Dream, and the River Itchen is considered by many to be one of the best chalk rivers in the world. The second item, livestock market closes for last time. Going, going, gone. After 400 years business, the hammer has fallen for the final time on Hampshire's last livestock market. Cows gave way to cars when the Winchester cattle market closed last Thursday owing to lack of trade. With predictable irony, the stock entry for the final market was the best for some time. With 231 lambs, 206 cattle, 41 calves and 9 pigs for auction.
Thank you. Now we move on to Chronicle comment followed by first person. Nikki.
Editorial comment. View of the silent majority is deafening. When a large room is packed with people overwhelmingly taking a view, it is easy for them to assume they represent public opinion as a whole. There is no doubt that Silver Hill stirs strong emotions, and around 150 people squeezed into the cabinet meeting last Thursday that decided to allow the developer Henderson to submit a new application. They have always disliked the scheme, but most people in Winchester want it to go ahead, as does the Chronicle. Councillor Gottlieb's campaign is 6 or 7 years too late. We do agree with some of his concerns, notably on affordable housing. Some 100 units are now unviable, and a financial contribution to off-site housing depends on the future profitability. The council should negotiate terms with Henderson that guarantees some social housing on-site. The lack of a bus station has also brought widespread criticism, but if bus firms don't want to run it, who will? Regarding the height of the seven-storey development, did Friarsgate wreck the city centre? No. Neither will Silver Hill. It will have a powerful impact for several years, and then, like other big buildings such as Guildhall, Prison, Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Law Courts, County Council and University Halls of Residence, be absorbed into the city.
George Hayter writes First Person this week, and it's headed River Mission Taking Me Through Unfamiliar Acres. I've found a new purpose in life, or at least a new purpose in trips to Hampshire's wonderful wilderness. Visiting the New Forest has always been a chance to stretch my horizons and stretch my legs. Trouble was, I could never think of anywhere new to go when I got there. There are 100,000 acres of New Forest, and on most of them I have never set foot. It's too easy to drive down the M3, take the same old routes to the same old forest car park, then follow the same path. How to make myself savour the vast acres away from familiar territory? Well, I've been taking a leaf out of Dr. Livingstone's book. The 19th century explorer is best known for trying to find the source of the Nile. My wife and I have been trying to find the source of a river in the New Forest. We chose Bewley River for the Sea to Source project, which we're tackling in a series of one-day excursions. After tracing the Bewley's course for a few miles, we drive home before returning another day. That could be weeks or months later. We come back to the point we left last time and resume our dogged search for the source. It's surprising how much private land there is in the forest, and we have to skirt several sections where the river flows through farmland or people's gardens. Further upstream, the river, becoming more a tiny stream with each mile, goes through thickets so impenetrable that again we have to divert away from its course. Elsewhere, we have been kept at bay by bogs. Whenever we come to a fork, we always follow the branch of the river carrying the greatest flow. Where Bewley River passes under the railway, we came to a confluence where we had a job to gauge which stream was biggest. We followed what we judged to be the main channel for hours, balancing and squelching for hundreds of yards through tricky terrain which combined thicket and bog. Back home that night, I wrung the bog water from my socks and plucked the thorns from my back. Then I looked on a large-scale map and found that our painful passage through the thicket bog had all been for nothing. We'd been following a mere tributary. On the map, it was the other branch that was labelled Bewley River. Since then, I've learned that the official source of a river is not the place at the head of the main channel, but simply the point on the river furthest from the sea as measured along the river. Next time, we'll have to go back to the fork and start up the proper course to the source. So, I've found a new purpose in life. But I still haven't found the source of the Bewley River.
And Belgarum, I think, has a couple of items this time, Albie.
Yes, it has. The alternative look at the news. And the first one is under the heading, Is This a First for the Jewel in the Crown? It's always a gamble to say something in Winchester has happened for the first time when its history stretches back 2,000 years. Winchester College has invited city councillors to hold a meeting at the historic school. The invitation, thought to be unprecedented, was extended by member of staff Michael Wallace at the town forum recently. He said the invitation came from headmaster Ralph Townsend and chairman of governors Sir David Clementi, who are keen to forge links with the wider community. Councillor Chris Pines described the invitation as brilliant, adding, I've watched the college for the last 50 years and how it has changed in attitude. The college used to think Winchester was a small town on the edge of a school. It's nice to see its change of approach and change in vision. After all, the college is a huge jewel in the crown locally. Mr. Wallace said the school was one of the city's biggest employers, with some 517 people, including 360 full-time, on the payroll, and 690 pupils. The annual turnover is $28 million. He said the school is keen to return to the original aims of its founder, William of Wykeham, to educate the poor and needy. In 2014-15, 93 boys will have bursaries of more than half their fees, a total of $2.06 million. The aim is to have 25% of boys on bursaries by 2018, although Mr. Wallace said it would not be met. It provides a major boost to the local economy, supporting shops such as Wilds Sports, Kingsgate Stores and Wells Bookshop, and services such as food takeaways. The War Cloister, in memory of fallen former pupils, teachers and support staff, is believed to be the biggest private memorial in England, said Mr. Wallace. It maintains some 90 listed buildings and sites of special scientific interest. Boys who are not in the cadet force give community service in local schools and care homes. Call Evensong in the chapel is open to the public every Tuesday. And the second item, under the heading Festival Draws to a Close, when you've enjoyed a literary festival, what better way to finish off than with a cricket match? On Sunday, as a climax to its highly successful Festival of Books, West Meon hosted the celebrated Authors' Eleven in a match in front of an enthusiastic crowd. Fresh from giving a sparkling hour of anecdotes in the local church, Peter Baxter, of BBC Test Match Special fame, met the captains on the square to administer the toss. Charlie Campbell won for the Authors and elected to bat, and then followed a run fest as the Authors stroked and smashed their way to 209 for three before closing their innings just before tea. West Meon responded well, reaching 158 for two before skipper David Swain was bowled for a swashbuckling 60. Three comical run-outs followed. But Belgarum hears the home side ended just 16 runs short. A draw. A fair result. And there's a photograph of Peter Baxter, Charlie Campbell, Authors 11, and David Swain, West Meon, looking skywards, waiting for the coin to fall at the toss for who should bat first.
Let you now move on to this week's announcements. We start with What's On. And in Winchester Cathedral, there's a lunchtime concert on Tuesday, the 22nd of July, at 1 p.m. It's a free concert with a retiring collection. In Romsey Abbey, there's an organ recital on Friday, the 25th of July, at 7:30 p.m. And for that, tickets are available on the door at a cost of £5. The Mayflower, Southampton, has The Lion King running until the 6th of September. There are matinees several days of the week, but for information you can telephone the box office on 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. And running on the back of 100 years anniversary of the start of the First World War, there's a new exhibition called Waiting in the Wings of War. It reflects the lives of Hampshire people before the outbreak of World War One, and that's at the Royal Greenjackets Museum at Peninsula Barracks, and it runs until the 27th of July. Now, we've also had information from OpenSight to say that the OpenSight Mobile Advisory Service bus will be in Alton Market in High Street, Alton, on Tuesday the 22nd of July, between the hours of 10:30 and 12:30. So that's the OpenSight Mobile Advisory Service bus, and it'll be in Alton Market in the High Street at Alton, Tuesday the 22nd of July. And lighting up time ends on Friday the 18th of July at 5:11 a.m. and begins at 9:11 p.m. On Wednesday the 23rd of July, it ends at 5:18 a.m. and begins at 9:05 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That concludes the announcements, and now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And the heading, Buying Local is Key to Thriving Town. Independent shops work together in campaign. Retailers in Bishop's Waltham have been celebrating their own variation on Independence Day with a new marketing campaign in a bid to increase footfall. The new Totally Locally campaign aims to bring together independent shops throughout the town to work together by increasing communication levels and bringing in new marketing techniques. It is hoped by doing so there will be more support for traders and will bring in more shoppers to the town. Visiting the market was Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury, who discussed the new platform with Emma Bonsfield, co-owner of local accessories store Love It, Want It, and Amanda Redwin, owner of Refunk Interiors. Ms. Bondesfield said, "You might spend £5 a week on coffees, but are you going to spend it in the chains, or are you going to go to the Independents, where they have lovely homemade cakes and are family-owned and staffed by local people? I know what I would rather do. We want to get away from spending money online and in the supermarkets. We actually crunched the numbers. We took the census data, and there are roughly 12,000 people of a wage-earning age who have a disposable income, and if each of them were to spend £5 a week, it would bring in an extra 2.5 million here into our economy. What people don't realise is that by buying online or in their supermarket, they lose out on all this wonderful independent produce and force local entrepreneurs out of business. We want to break that cycle and show people that buying local really is the key. The Specialist Market Day, Independence Day, had a variety of stalls taking part, including the Durley Strawberry and Ice Cream Party, a Pim's Tent, arts and crafts stalls, while local band The Scary Biscuits performed live for the swathes of consumers. Mr. Hollingbury said, "What Bishop's Waltham offers is a fantastic array of shops, and what they do is make sure people understand what's on offer. It's wonderful to see all the shops working together, making this happen." And there's a lovely photograph of George Hollingbury and the two ladies, Amanda Redwin and Emma Bonsfield, in their mauve shirts. And it looks rather like he's wearing a mauve shirt too. And they've got the badge on the front of the T-shirts, excuse me, saying Totally Locally.
The next item is headed Warm Welcome for Women Bishops. This sends out a clear and joyful message. That's the view of figures within Hampshire's church community after the Church of England voted in favour of allowing women to become bishops. Bishops, clergy and laity in the General Synod houses all voted in favour of the motion at the University of York on Monday. There was a shock in 2012 after the plan was narrowly defeated. Now members of the church across the county have reacted positively to the vote. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin, the Bishop of Winchester, said, "Synod's decision has sent out a clear and joyful message. At last, gifted women leaders will be able to serve as bishops. I'm delighted. For so long, including in our own Diocese of Winchester, the Church of England has benefited greatly from the outstanding ministry of both women and men working together. Now we can look forward to working together in our mission as bishops as well. This has been an emotional journey for many. That applies much for those who have campaigned steadfastly for this day, as well as those traditional views that have been challenging by the process. All should continue to have an honoured place both in our diocese and across the church. Importantly, this has been properly reflected in the legislation that Synod has passed." The Reverend Claire Downing, moderator of the Wessex Synod of the United Reformed Church, said, "It's something that has been on the cards for so long that although there are those who are somewhat upset by it, it's not a surprise to anyone anymore." Christine Whitehead, newly ordained deacon working in the benefice of Chandler's Ford, said, "I was surprised how personally I felt hurt by the previous vote against." The Right Reverend Jonathan Frost, the Bishop of Southampton, said, "I'm absolutely delighted. This is very good news for women and very good news for women in the church."
This article, under the heading PR Agency Moves Up in Top 10, a Winchester PR firm has been ranked as one of the top 10 agencies outside London. Remarkable Group rose for the third consecutive year in the PR Week Top 150, cementing its position to 10th best agency outside of London and 69th overall. The group has expanded from Garnier Road, St. Cross, to open offices in Manchester, London, and plans to create a new base in Bristol. Chief Executive Stephen Pomeroy said, "Our year-on-year rise up the PR Week Top 150 is testament to our embracing of the evolution of modern media, but with a solid foundation of communication skills and knowledge. Clients are delighted with what we do. That's what we always aim for, with a focus on content, professionalism, and imagination. Remarkable Group is emerging as one of the new breed of communications agencies." And there is a photograph of 51 members of the company, all smiling away and looking very pleased with themselves.
Cat is lucky to be alive after shooting, but owners face agonising wait over pet's fate. A family pet was lucky to be alive after being shot with pellets, its distraught owner said. Now the couple face an agonising wait to find out whether the pellets that littered 18-month-old cat Felix will prove fatal. Vets have told Quinton Britton and Angela Linton that there are too many pellets in Felix to surgically remove, and if they are lead, they could kill him through poisoning. Black and white cat Felix was shot just 150 metres away from home, and it is also believed the cruel attack continued as a broken tail suggests he was picked up and swung around. The couple's bills have already run up to £250, and the family, who have no pet insurance, believe this could treble over the course of treatment. Mr. Britton of Chilbolton Down Farm near Stockbridge said, "We noticed he was dragging his rear right leg. It was very painful when we touched it. He was hissing and scratching, which he would never do as he is a family cat. The vet thinks the broken tail was done at the same time. He's a friendly cat. He plays with the children down the road. It might change, but he could be left permanently like that, or he could lose his leg. It's unbelievable." The vet said it was the worst thing he'd seen in 25 years. Now Mr. Britton has offered a £500 reward to anyone with information that leads to the conviction of whoever is responsible. He has spoken to a shotgun expert who believes that the cat would have been shot from a distance of just 30 to 35 metres. Miss Linton added, "He's lucky to be alive. We still don't know if it's lead pellets. If it is, that will kill him." Mr. Britton, who owns a tabby and a dog, said Felix was wandering around the farm when a neighbour heard a loud gunshot. It was not until next morning that the cat returned with shotgun injuries. He was then taken to Hawksdown Vets in Stockbridge, where an X-ray revealed the full extent of the damage. Felix must now be kept in a cage for the next 6 weeks to see if the pellets work themselves out. A police spokesman said, "The cat was discovered injured at the victim's home address, but it is unknown where the incident occurred. Anyone with information about the incident should contact Stockbridge Safer Neighbourhoods team by calling 101. And it's a photograph of Quentin Britton and his partner Angela Linton with their cat Felix, who's mainly white, bits of black, but the most extraordinarily luminous yellow eyes.
Firefighters to step up industrial action, but Chief says Hampshire residents will be safe. Hampshire firefighters will strike for 8 consecutive days later this month as they step up their industrial action campaign. In the latest round of walkouts during the 3-year dispute over pensions, firefighters across England and Wales will strike during 2 2-hour periods each day between July the 14th and July the 21st. The strikes will take place from 6 until 8 a.m. and 5 until 7 p.m. Monday through to Thursday, and could mean major problems during rush hour when the service is often called to help with serious accidents. The boss of Hampshire's Fire Authority, which holds the county's service to account, said he didn't condone the wave of action but believed Hampshire residents would be safe. On Friday, they will walk out from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Firefighters will also down tools from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Saturday and 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Sunday. As reported, the Fire Brigades Union is locked in a battle with government over pensions, with union bosses saying the new Westminster deal would leave firefighters paying more, working longer and receiving less. Meanwhile, Whitehall has repeatedly criticised the strikes and says it has contingency plans to keep the public safe. But Matt Rack, FBU General Secretary, said the government must realise that firefighters cannot accept proposals that would have such devastating consequences for their futures, their families' futures and the future of the Fire and Rescue Service itself. We have tried every route available to make the government see sense over their attacks. 3 years of negotiations have come to nothing because the government is simply unwilling to compromise or even listen to reason, despite a huge amount of evidence showing their planned scheme is unworkable. Royston Smith, chairman of Hampshire's Fire Authority, told the Hampshire Chronicle that while he wished firefighters would not go on strike, he believed Hampshire will be safe. He added, "These strikes are obviously designed to cause disruption, and that is what they are going to do. I don't condone any times that they pick. But because Hampshire has fire stations covered by retained firefighters who are not involved in this strike, we have maintained a 50% cover in previous strikes, and I don't see it being any different now." The FBU also recently launched a legal challenge against the government's proposals, claiming the government's plans over pensions amount to age discrimination.
And now some local football news. City bash Bashley. Winchester City took to the road for the first time during pre-season on Friday with a game at Southern Premier League Bashley. Co-manager Tim Cole brought a 16-man squad and started the game with a bang, writes John Moody. Mike McHenry shot straight at the keeper from the kickoff, and a minute into the match, Zach Glasspool fed Warren Bentley, who finished with a hard shot into the back of the net. City dominated the next 20 minutes of the match without scoring again before Bashley got back into the game, albeit without really bothering the City defence. Just before half-time, City could have gone two up when McHenry put Bentley clear, but he missed a sitter from close range. Having not really been called into action in the first half, Winchester's Jason Collins handed over the goalkeeper's shirt to Ross Casey for the second period, but he also did not get much practice in. City's second goal came in the 65th minute when Stuart Mott created a chance for Glasspool and he hit a first-time shot home. This goal stung Bashley into action at last, and they nearly scored when the City defence was caught too far upfield, but the lone forward hit the crossbar. At the other end, Bentley forced a good save and Wilson had a powerful shot well saved. Glasspool scored his second with a good individual effort in the 80th minute. He broke free in the box, outmuscled the defender and scored with an angled drive. City rounded off an impressive performance a minute into injury time when Jeff Dunn, advancing from the back, flicked the ball into the box and Sam Wilson converted the cross.
Callum makes an impressive entrance. It would have left any Ferraris, Hummers or tractors standing. When it comes to trumping your mates at prom, Callum Hall wins easily. He arrived at the Perrin School event in a Robinson R44 helicopter, courtesy of his grandfather. Callum, 16, had suggested it would be a good idea, especially as he wants to be a commercial pilot. His granddad, Chris Thompson, a pilot, made arrangements and the craft made the short 9-minute flight from near Callum's home in West Tisted, near Alsford, to the Botley Grange Hotel. Callum said, It was amazing. It was really, really thrilling, the sensation of taking off vertically. I just wanted to do something different. You hear of people going in supercars. One or two people thought I was being a snob, but lots of people asked me questions about it, and lots have been pulling my leg. Mr. Thompson said, Callum flies with me all the time. All the kids try to outdo each other, so I asked a friend, Peter Waldron, a professional pilot, to do it. Took a bit of arranging, and the hotel charged £125. And there's a photograph of Callum in a very smart in his suit, arriving James Bond style and behind the dark blue, neat little helicopter. Good move.
Star pupils know their road safety rules. School children have been battling it out to find out who knows best when it comes to the rules of the road. Around 50 children gathered at Winchester Fire Station to learn all about road safety, giving their own show-and-tell demonstrations and taking part in simulated crash scenes. The children worked their way up the leaderboard as they completed different tasks, including jigsaws, perception tests and quizzes. The main activity saw one nominated child from each school investigate a crash scene involving several fire officers present. Their duty was to find out the cause of an accident and report it back to their school team. Station manager Rob Dello, Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service's lead for road safety, said, "We have seven schools here within Hampshire, and over the past 12 months they have done a lot of road safety related events. They are already regional champions, but this is about finding the best school in Hampshire. The kids have been up for a fair bit of competition, and it seems to really push their abilities. It's a test. It's a chance to test their road safety understanding, observation skills, and learn about the difference between crossings." Nola Stockley, 11, a Week Primary School, said, "It's been really fun and educational. My favourite part was when we did the investigation outside. It's important that you keep everything you've learned in your heads and use it when crossing the road." This year's winning school was Long Sutton Primary School in Hook. Then there's a photograph of two of the pupils looking down on an apparent road safety accident victim clutching his knee beside a crashed bicycle.
James Durrant serves up. Hampshire chef James Durrant serves up his winning dish at this year's New Forest Show. James Durrant, who created Great British Menu's winning main course for the banquet held at St. Paul's in honour of the 70th anniversary of D-Day, will be preparing his winning dish at the New Forest Show. You'll find him at the show's Cookery Demonstration Theatre at 3:30 p.m. on the 30th of July. The Great British Menu judges were unanimous in their praise of James' dish, called Blitz Spirit. One of the judges, Matthew Fort, described the dish as an orchestra of flavours without one discordant note. James is just one of the several top chefs cooking at the New Forest Show's Cookery Theatre in the food and farming area. Chefs making an appearance over the three-day event will include Angela Hartnett and Luke Holder from Limewood, James Golding from the Pig Hotel with Create to Cook competition winners Appamore College, Luke Matthews from Chewton Glen, Ollie Rouse and Andy McKenzie from Lainston House, Judy Smales from Liban Cheese, Paul Dickinson, head of food Fuller's Inns, and Billy Outen from Outen's. And there are two photographs. One of James Durrant preparing his dish, cutting up a piece of meat, and the other photograph of James presenting the delicious dish of his food preparation, Blitz Spirit.
A touch of Hawaii at Dragon Boat Race. Chinese dragon boats have been racing for 2,000 years, but not usually to the theme from Hawaii 5-0. To the blaring American cop show tune, some 15 teams raced the craft along 250 metres of the Itchen Navigation near Winchester to raise money for the Samaritans last Saturday. With the beat of a drum in each prow, The crews powered their craft along the waterway with teams from the Army Training Regiment, Domino's Pizza, and Alsford and Cheriton Scouts among those taking part. Scores of people watched the racing while picnicking on Palmer's Field, made available courtesy of Winchester College. It is hoped the event will raise £4,000 for the charity. We have six photographs, mainly of the people rowing, and I wish you could see all in their life jackets, the faces grimacing with the effort as they powered these boats down the waterways. The boats themselves are quite beautiful, wooden, with their prows with the dragon head in green and yellow and red on the front. Fierce teeth looking like they're going to eat up everybody. And there's one team of women there who don't seem to be going anywhere at the moment. They've all got coloured wigs on and are looking like they're enjoying it, but definitely resting. It's mainly the men who are very competitive. And one last picture of the winning team all punching the air, high-fiving, whatever. And one little boy there, and I think he might have been a drummer because each boat has about 12 people on it, at least, with someone steering at the back and someone banging the drum at the front. It looked like a very good event, and it was obviously a beautiful day.
Concert to raise funds for medical research. A concert in aid of funding vital medical research was launched in Winchester. Supporters, sponsors and committee members for Cancer Research UK met outside Winchester Cathedral to launch a concert which will boost funds. The Winchester Choral Concert will take place in the historic cathedral in August, bringing the 120-strong Gaudamus Chorale to the stage. Clinical scientist and surgeon Tim Underwood was at the launch to show his support, alongside MP Steve Bryan. Mr. Bryan said, "What I like about this event is that, yes, we are raising money for cancer, and yes, there's the big money donors and people with deep pockets that make significant donations, but actually, fundraising across the country is also down to devoted individuals who just get up and make this kind of thing happen." Conducted by Graham Willey, the concert includes Fauré's Requiem, along with Ave Maria Stella, by leading contemporary composer Cecilia McDowell, Vaughan Williams' Five Mystical Songs, and Parry's Blessed Pair of Sirens, which was performed in Westminster Abbey at the wedding of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. They will be joined by Welsh baritone Diffyd Wynne-Evans, soprano Rachel Johnson, and organist Oystev Evans, Director of Music at St James Spanish Place, London. It will be held on Saturday, August the 16th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets cost between £12 and £20. And if you would like to go, you can book by calling 01962 857275. That's 01962 857275.
Now, on a more sombre note, County is one of the most expensive places to die. Hampshire is one of the most expensive places to die in the country, new figures have revealed. A study revealed the county is the most expensive place for cremations, on average, in the UK, while it is the fourth highest for average burial costs. The figures from the Engage Mutual 2014 Funeral Cost Tracker show the cost of cremation in Hampshire is £3,957, some £700 higher than the UK average. Average burial costs are even higher at £6,519, the fourth highest in the country, and well above the country's average of £4,690. Costs have risen dramatically in just 2 years. The Engage Mutual report shows cremations in Hampshire would set families back £2,833 on average, while the cost of burials have risen by an average of £2,384 in the same period. The firm now warns people are in danger of leaving a legacy of debt by not planning for soaring funeral costs. Chris Waters of Waters and Son Funeral Directors in Hampshire said, "The price of everything is going up at the moment, such as petrol and gas, and the prices of funerals are the same. Hampshire is a more affluent area. Also, so perhaps that plays in making the county more expensive. People don't always understand the breakdown of costs involved, which include third-party costs, such as ministers' fees and doctors' fees.
New health hub for city centre. A long empty Winchester office block is set to reopen as a new health centre in January 2015. Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust has taken the lease on Avalon House on Chessel Street. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for environment, health and wellbeing, told Cabinet about Southern's plans to build a health and wellbeing hub in the city centre. She said it would be a base for a range of services, including community nurses, health visitors, mental health teams and children's services. Avalon House is the former Winchester City Council planning office and has been vacant since 2007.
Weeds, a growing appreciation. Horsford and District Horticultural Society heard guest speaker Dr. Alec Jones pose a question at the start of an impressive PowerPoint presentation, Weeds, Can We Ever Win? His audience thought they knew the answer and were proven right as the amusing talk that illustrated why we can never win. Some weeds, like ground elder, are unloved, being impossible to dig out. It was found 28 foot below ground during construction of the London Underground, yet it makes an acceptable alternative to spinach. Opinions also change. Yellow rattle used to be ranked as a weed, but is now a rarity, although it may become more common as its usefulness under trees as a substitute for grass has caught the attention of many gardeners. The dislike most have for weeds was discussed based on the competition with more valued plants, the offence they create visually, and the physical pain weeds like nettles can cause. With huge numbers of seeds produced, the corn poppy has an average of 14,550 to 19,500 impressive ways of seed dispersal and seeds that can germinate after 21 years underground. That's ragwort. The audience appreciated that they were up against in trying to remove them. The suggestions of prevention by using mulches or ground cover, of removal with early and regular weeding and tolerance were appreciated. However, a different attitude also emerged as pictures showed the delicate beauty of many weeds and their usefulness to many living things. The audience went away with thoughts of letting the lawn grow a little longer and enjoying the plants that grew there.
Now, this article comes with a photograph of 11 men and women who've been ordained deacons at Winchester Cathedral by the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, the Bishop of Winchester. The seven women and four men, ranging in age from 27 to 62, bring a huge breadth of background and experience. The new deacons are Angie Smith, Winchester, Christchurch, Christine Whitehead, Chandler's Ford, Jono Harvey, Eastleigh, Joe Mulliner, Lymington, Amy Powis, Shirley, Laris Campbell, Ringwood, Lee Davis, Andover St. Mary, Nikki Davies, Fordingbridge, Rachel Hartland, Old Basing, Rachel Noel, Fordingbridge, Linda Scard, North Hampshire Downs. Between them, they have a strong track record of public service, working in professions including teaching and nursing. The bishop said, "I am delighted to have welcomed these new members of the clergy. Deacons take on a particular responsibility to serve the community and reach out to those in need and play an important part in proclaiming the gospel to their local communities."
Former MP did not break election law. The Crown Prosecution Service and Hampshire Police have apologised to former Hampshire MP Michael Mates, who was wrongly accused of breaking election law. Both have confirmed Mr. Mates, East Hampshire MP for 36 years until 2010, was not guilty of any offence during his campaign for the post of Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight in 2012. It was claimed that Mr. Mates, who has just celebrated his 80th birthday, had acted illegally by using a flat in St. Cross, Winchester, as his address, and that he should have taken part in the so that he could take part in the contest. After an investigation by police, the CPS said that it would not be in the public interest to launch a prosecution. Last Thursday, the CPS issued a statement. In October 2013, the CPS considered allegations that Michael Mates committed an offence under Section 21 of the Police and Crime Commissioner Elections Order 2012. The CPS decided at that time that there was sufficient evidence for a realistic prospect of conviction, but that no charges should be brought as a prosecution would not be in the public interest. The CPS made a statement in October 2013 explaining its decision not to prosecute Mr. Mates. Following a complaint made by Mr. Mates, the CPS carried out a review of this decision and it has concluded that it had been wrong to determine that there was sufficient evidence for a realistic prospect of conviction. The CPS has apologised to Mr. Mates for any distress and embarrassment that its wrong decision and public statement in October 2013 caused. The CPS, of course, accepts that Mr. Mates committed no offence. Hampshire's Chief Constable, Andy Marsh, has also apologised. He said, "If the investigation has caused Mr. Mates professional or personal embarrassment or other personal difficulties, then this clearly was not the intention of the police, and for that I apologise. Furthermore, I acknowledge and accept the statement of the CPS that Mr. Mates is innocent of any offence." Mr. Mates, who has accepted what he calls substantial damages from the CPS, said, "What has been a nightmare for my wife and myself for more than 18 months is now over. We had to endure the ordeal of interviews under criminal caution because of allegations that were made with malice. We have endured endless delays while the various authorities kept us completely in the dark as to what was going on. I have been through 6 or 7 appeal processes, all of which dismissed my assertions that I had done nothing wrong." He added, "This is not the way our justice system should work. I shall endeavour to ensure that lessons are learned from what has been, for us, a most upsetting experience."
Jailed for pickaxe handle attack. A Winchester man who launched an unprovoked and sustained pickaxe handle attack on a man delivering a cake to his grandmother has been jailed for 6 years. John Berry, 32, hit Thomas Appleton numerous times in a savage assault on a suburban street, Winchester Crown Court heard. A doctor said it was surprising that Mr. Appleton did not suffer a fractured skull in the attack in Moss Road, Winnell, Winchester, on March the 22nd. Tom Wright, prosecuting, said Mr. Appleton, 31, a mechanic, was taking a cake to his 76-year-old granny at around 9 a.m. He reversed his car off the road and so impeded a van driven by Berry, causing an exchange of words and gestures, said Mr. Wright. After delivering the cake, Mr. Appleton returned to his car to find Berry waiting for him with the pickaxe handle. After asking Appleton if he thought he was hard, he struck him on the head with the handle. Berry went on to hit him at least 10 times on the left-hand side of his body, systematically working his way up the side of his body from ankle to head. Mr. Wright added he went to the floor. He remembers hearing his 76-year-old grandmother screaming, "Stop!" Mr. Appleton is not clear why Berry stopped. A car may have passed, or the grandmother screaming for him to break off the assault. Mr. Appleton was taken to Royal Hampshire County Hospital and needed numerous stitches for a jagged wound in his scalp. Mr. Wright said that Mr. Appleton was incredibly lucky. He would not have been surprised by a fractured skull or intracranial bleed. On arrest, Berry told the police, "I did hit him. I should have gone home." Berry of Spitfire End, Winnell, admitted assault and causing grievous bodily harm. He was also told to pay a £120 victim surcharge.
Now, feature item by Charlotte Neal, who doesn't let her imagination run away with her on a supernatural tour of some of the city's oldest buildings. And it comes under the heading Reliving City's Ghostly Past with Spooky Tour. With its tall buildings, Gothic architecture and narrow side streets, when the sun goes down, Winchester is the perfect place to relive haunting tales. At first greeted by a warm buzz similar of any local pub, the Royal Oak just off St. George's Street was packed full of faces glimmering with expectation. That soon disappeared, as I was directed to the cellar, through a rough wooden door and down an uneven staircase. Crammed with tables, chairs and candles, the room reeked of old candle wax, beer, and of course the anticipation ahead of a night of ghostly goings-on. After a brief introduction and health and safety briefing, don't aggravate the poltergeist, we walked to the top of St. George's Street and listened with bated breath as the tale of four ghosts at Winchester's Theatre Royal was explained. Our guides, one burly masked man and another top hat clad gent, took great pleasure in relaying the gory details of death and disaster as our walk continued to the West Gate at the top of the High Street, the last of the main medieval gates into the city. The building has since been refurbished and now operates as a museum showcasing the Tudor and Stuart era. It is believed it was used to hold prisoners, as many as 20 to one tiny room, and we heard how one tried to escape and received a flogging, his screams still to be heard today, though we heard nothing. We carried on to the Great Hall Castle and to St. Clement Street behind the former offices of the Hampshire Chronicle, which are said to hold a female ghost who screams in the night, the agonised spirit of a woman fatally trapped in the printing press. Now about halfway through the evening, darkness continued to fall, bringing with it a cold chill, forcing us all to button our jackets. It only added to the atmosphere. In twilight, the city's beautiful historic buildings only looked more grand and added weight to the weird and wonderful ghostly tales. To bring the night to a close, there was a stop at the Eclipse Inn in the square, but not for a pint. Truly saving the best till last, the convincing story of a grey lady had 30 strong group gripped. Dating back to 1540, the pub has previously been a rectory, private residence, alehouse, and from the 19th century, an inn. Thought to be Dame Alice Lyle of Moyles Court, who was executed on a top floor platform. The grey lady is said to pace the room in which she spent her last night. Although I didn't drive home half expecting to see a white shadow every time I looked in the rear view mirror, taken with a pinch of salt, the ghost walk was a good spirited, excuse the pun, and fun evening. And there are photographs, one of the top hat clad gentleman in leather overcoat, a rather worried and expectant crowd of people listening to him, and the two men, the burly and the top-hatted, looking very ghostly.
A blissful experience. Two Winchester students lent a helping hand at a music festival this month. Peter Simmons College students, Ruby Tansy Thomas and Harriet Taylor, both 17, helped Southampton Solent University students at Blissfields Festival at Vicarage Farm. They assisted 30 students from the university's TV production event management and popular music courses, who produced a daily newspaper, filmed interviews with bands, liaised with artists, worked on the sound and helped out as part of the backstage crew. Ruby said, "It was amazing being involved in this. I loved doing the interviewing because I got to meet some great bands. Everyone involved was really helpful and supportive, and I didn't once feel like I wasn't part of the team." Festival owner Paul Bliss said, "I'm totally blown away by the work the students have done." And there's a lovely picture of the two girls wearing their headbands and clutching the publicity pictures of Blissfields, I think.
Tributes to road accident victim. New life in Australia cut too short. A former Winchester man died in a road crash a year after moving to Australia. Robert Townsend, 27, suffered horrific injuries when he was thrown from his bicycle after being struck by a pickup on an unlit country road in New South Wales. His mum and dad paid tribute to their only son, who they described as a gentleman who had touched many lives. His mum, Mary of Highmount Close Winchester, told the Chronicle, "We had a lot of letters from friends. They said he was a gentleman. Robert was not one to follow the crowd. He wore a top hat and tails to a wedding in Bali when everyone else was in shorts. He was an individual. It didn't matter to him if he was the only person dressed like that. He had a lot of friends, and we have a big file of cards and letters. A lot said how much he had touched their lives. I think he had a good life. He did good for other people. It's just sad that it had been so short." His dad Ian, a visiting professor at Southampton University, said, "He was quite good at giving advice. People wrote to tell us how he changed the way they looked at life." Mary said he liked cooking for people. There was a lot in the letters about his famous risotto. Once he served it at 5 a.m. Speed was not his strong point, neither was punctuality. We started his funeral 5 minutes late. Robert had an older sister, Amy, 30, who married in April last year, and the last time the family saw him. Part of the eulogy given at his funeral at St. Peter's Church in Winchester said, "For he inhabited a world of justice, integrity, of moral purpose, and a world completely lacking in prejudice." Robert went to All Saints Primary School in Highcliffe, the Westgate Secondary, and Peter Simmons College before studying classics at St. Andrews in Scotland. At the inquest in Southampton last week, the coroner ruled that the driver, who was overtaking another vehicle in the dark at the time, was not to blame for the tragedy. Recording an accidental death verdict, Mr. Short dismissed suggestions the cyclist was not paying attention. "It's more likely that he was dazzled by the lights of the car driving towards him and unaware of a vehicle as it pulled out and didn't have time to take evasive action."
Boost for engineering firm. A Hampshire engineering firm has won a multi-million pound contract. Raymond Brown has joined up with Viridor, one of the UK's largest waste management companies. The contract will not only boost the overall group, but will make Raymond Brown Aggregates one of the leading companies in processing incinerator bottom ash in the country. Viridor incinerates non-recyclable waste collected from Oxfordshire homes on behalf of the County Council. Raymond Brown has signed a 15-year contract with Viridor to process ash from the incineration process for use in road construction and similar activities. To service the contract, Raymond Brown, which has operations at Barton Stacey near Winchester, offices in Nursling, and its group headquarters in Ringwood, will invest £2 million into the processing plant in Oxford. The group has a turnover of near £90 million and employs over 400 people in its civil engineering, construction, aggregates and recycling businesses, and has been growing in recent years despite the recession.
Extra care housing a step closer on car park. City councillors have paved the way for the controversial conversion of Winchester's Chessel Street open air car park into a 51 unit old people's housing scheme. Members of the Cabinet Housing Committee approved an officer's recommendation that a planning application for the £10 million project, drawn up in conjunction with PDP Chartered Architects, be submitted possibly as soon as September. There has been a 25% rise in the number of householders over the age of 85 within the district since 2001, prompting an increase in demand for extra care accommodation. But nearby residents and businesses are worried about the loss of a car park, which is usually full, believing the nearby multi-storey facility to be an unsuitable alternative for several reasons, including safety. They are also concerned that any new development will be a tall, monolithic institutional block, clashing with existing buildings along the historic street. Planning Officer Andrew Palmer explained how Chessel Street multi-storey could be upgraded with new lighting and more CCTV coverage to improve safety. He also said more on-street permit parking bays would be added in Wharf Hill to replace the ones lost through the development.
Rayard's marks war centenary. A centenary since the outbreak of the First World War, Romsey Amateur Operatic and Dramatic Society, Rayards, will stage a performance in its memory. 1914 will bring together the Michaelmas Silver Band and actors from Rayards who will bring to life some first-hand accounts of ordinary soldiers, well-known poetry from the war poets as well as the words of diarists and historians from the period. The programme will include songs that kept the soldiers going and a chance for the audience to join in. The evocative evening hymn and last post will be the climax to an evening of entertaining and respectful commemoration. Tickets cost £10 for the commemorative concert on Monday, July the 28th at the Plaza Theatre in Romsey. If you want to book, you can call the box office on 01794 512987. That's 01794 512987.
Long haul almost over for better scout facilities. Winchester Cubs and Scouts, their leaders and parents, have completed an epic fundraising trek, pushing and pulling a wooden cart from Brownsea Island to Winchester. About 70 to 80 people took part in the 2 days 60-mile long haul, aiming to raise £10,000 for their revamped hut in Week. Dave Kesby, chairman of the executive committee of the First Winchester Scout Group, speaking to the Hampshire Chronicle less than a mile from the finish, said, "It has gone incredibly well. It's been very trying, literally a long haul. It has been invigorating and inspiring. Lots of people didn't think it would happen. People didn't think we could do it, but we've done it." The group borrowed a historic wooden cart, which were commonly used 50 to 80 years ago, to take scout gear to a campsite. This one is thought to be at least 60 years old and was borrowed from 25th Southampton Sea Scouts. Two people pulled the cart at any one time, although going up and downhill took about four people. They started at 8 a.m. on Saturday at Sandbanks and completed 36 miles on the first day, staying the night at the Ferneycroft Scout Centre in the New Forest. The trekkers were met in the Broadway by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, on Sunday evening. The hut's renovation is due to finish on the 1st of October, ready to open as a preschool during the day and scout hut by evening. Mr. Kesby said that it is likely to be pushed back after problems with the concrete floor setting on time. There are two photographs. One of a group of the scout leaders pulling the old cart, and another of the group of seniors and children, scouts, some in uniform, all standing on the steps of the Guild Hall with the Mayor of Winchester, Eileen Berry. And they've all got their arms raised and shouting out, "We've done it."
And this I'm reading because of an enchanting photograph of these Beamish boys, this under-11 Eastern and Martyrworthy cricket team, all lined up, tousle-haired, obviously hot, in the sunshine, having won. Eastern and Martyrworthy under-11s won the Winchester Warriors Oliver Cup final in a drama-filled match against Sparsholt at Twyford Cricket Club on Sunday. EMW opener Alex Miles got his team off to a good start with a boundary off the first ball, and fellow opener and captain Joey Mitchell carefully played himself in as he was carrying a knee injury and needed a runner. Miles was caught, but Ludo Natchbull and Mitchell formed a strong partnership until Mitchell was run out on 24. EMW attempted to raise the run rate with a lot of quick singles, but the Sparsholt fielders were red hot and threw brilliantly to claim 5 run outs in total. Pick of the Sparsholt bowlers was Alex Kibbs, who took 2 for 5 in his 2 overs. Thomas Lee and Joseph Cook each took 1 wicket, and keeper Sasha Groom kept very neatly, only conceding 2 byes. Play was dramatically stopped 2 balls short of the 20th over when Sparsholt's Jack Phillips chased Kyle Davies' shot to the boundary and seriously injured his knee in the process. He had to be stretchered off and taken to hospital by ambulance. The decision was made to end the innings at that point and play the game over 9 for 4 overs. EMW finished on 109 for 9 wickets. Sparsholt were no doubt affected by Phillips' injury, and they got off to the worst possible start when EMW's Hill bowled their opener with the first ball. While Sparsholt's Elliot Collier carried his bat for 11 not out, his teammates fell to EMW's attentive and responsive bowling and fielding. Harrison got 3 wickets in 2 overs, with catches by Thomas Siddall and Miles. Siddall, Miles and Watson-Smith each executed a run-out. Knatchbull and Siddall bowled a man each, and Knatchbull made an incredible catch at slip. Watson-Smith got 2 maiden overs and 1 wicket maiden. The Sparsholt innings ended on a 48 for 9, securing victory for EMW by 61 runs. The Player of the Match award went to Ludo Knatchbull for his good all-round performance.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.